So welcome, Carl. See how you feel about it.
I'm looking forward to this.
Okay. I'll do a quick review. Last time we did pages 280 to 281. What we've been working with in general was this issue of spirit and matter, you know, the mind and the body, the sexy girl and the old man, that kind of imagery, and meaning that Jung was unclear how those two connected, and obviously not willing to accept the split, which is so Cartesian, as a final position. We went through that, many images, until we had the image of death, and now we've got Gilgamesh. And Gilgamesh, remember, is the hero who, rather than getting stronger through the battle of life, gets more human. He actually ends up weaker from a power standpoint, but more humane from an eros standpoint. And we had this issue that Gilgamesh is at first blind. I'm not going to read that up there. I just put that little chart up there at the bottom. He's first blind, and in the course of the story, he gets lamed. And Jung starts out lamed, and in the course of the story, becomes blind. I wouldn't take that too seriously. I think it could almost be the other way around. But the way I would understand it thus far is that if the Gilgamesh as an image of the self is blind, that means when it wants its intent realized, it hits us with blind passion. Usually sex, but doesn't have to be. Can be power. Greed. Where the shift then is that in making the self conscious, it gets lamed. In other words, it doesn't have the power to drive you like it did when it was unconscious. It works through instinct. The ego, as Jung, starts out lamed, which I took to mean, and of course this is all my take on it, that the ego doesn't really find its strength until it's related to the self. So that he's lamed initially, and he becomes blind, meaning he develops the capacity for blind faith. All of that's going to be reevaluated. And remember, these are very early formulations. He's really stumbling in the dark. And we'll see he comes back to that, in effect, he comes back to that several times.
So is it really what you're saying is that the transformation of its instinctual power,
mm-hmm.
once it's reached a relationship to the self and it becomes conscious, then it doesn't have the pull, the power to pull you back and forth in every which way.
Right.
You. And I, this morning I was thinking of a modern day Gilgamesh, and I kind of, in a way, William Buffett said, you know, I have too much money, I can't do anything more with it, that's useless to me. The one way I can use it is to help these projects all around the country. So in Indianapolis wiped out and got one.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Meadow or something.
They made them.
Yeah, that's right.
And he's
it's on the front page today's paper, but anyway, he's investing all this money to help these kids get out of poverty and get into a good socioeconomic situation.
Yeah.
Because he says, you know, he said some people just have the luck of the draw. I happen to have all the opportunities and was able to be successful, but other people don't have.
Yeah.
I mean,
he must be an amazing man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
he lives in his 3-bedroom ranch.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. I mean, he's not extravagant.
Yeah.
But now he's going around trying to lift these kids out of poverty.
Yeah.
You know, he says, I was lucky I could find my potential. I had the opportunities, but And I just thought, wow, that's kind of like a
beautiful
yoga meditation.
Yeah, it really is. It's just
know,
a different type of hero.
TFS stuff.
Yeah.
But now it doesn't pull him anymore, just to get more and more.
And we'll see that come up here in this text, how Jung is saying, well, I could get more. More of what?
Yeah.
What would I do with it? Exactly. I think that's a good illustration. And I love what he said about taxes, I must say.
Yeah. It really came in a timely...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So... Has he?
Yeah.
Was it McCain had 18 houses? Who needs 18 houses, for God's sake?
You mean that he wasn't renting out?
He didn't know how many houses he had.
I remember that.
Yeah. How can these people... Sorry, you hit one of my buttons. How can these people know what it's like to suffer economically? They're so isolated. Anyway, so yeah, it's about becoming human. Now, the other images that appeared last week was that there's a fire between those two. We'll see them sitting around the fire, meaning that the passion of life, the driving gimme, whether it's sex or goods or power, but the warmth of life comes out of the wrestling between those two sides, the ego and the self. That's where the fire comes that they can sit around. We'll see more of that. And again, don't make too much of what I said, lame and blind, blind and lame. I would rather say we're seeing Jung beginning to realize the reciprocity of ego and self. That I think we can say. And he is just getting the first inclination of how these two systems interact. So it's muddy. And you can say, well, couldn't it be that way around? Does it have to be like this? No, it can be several things. He's just got the first idea, I think. And I think I said it before, but I'll just say it again. I'm learning as we do this, and I'm trying to get my own thoughts straight, because there's just, as you know, there's so much material in here, that what our interpretation can do is two things. One, try to understand what Jung was going through, and two, see in these images the foundation of Jungian psychology. So here, I would say, is the foundation of the reciprocity between ego and self, just in its first appearance. A couple other details. We talked about how the old can be poisonous. So Gilgamesh, in his unredeemed condition, is the old king, which is values that are out of date. We saw the term of the middle way appear, I think, for the first time in the book. Between Jung and Gilgamesh, that term comes up on page 281. Again, a central feature of Jung's psychology, that the way to resolve this conflict is to find the path of your life, which goes between the two.
Very interesting, small question, but you know, we talk about the self-image, and I'm just wondering about the ego. Is it an image too when it's not in relationship with the self? Because it isn't the fullness of who we are. Can our egos be seen as an image too? We have the self-image.
I think it could, sure.
But then we really only see ourselves in a certain way when we're not in relationship with us.
But you could see images of yourself in the dream, and that would be the ego as an image. Yeah. Jung calls the ego a complex, just like any other complex, except it's conscious.
So you would see yourself in the dream in a less than, whatever that is, less than important to be, or less than thinking to be. You would see that.
I think it depends where you are. If your ego is weak, it might show you stronger than you are, to build you up. But if your ego is strong, it will start bashing you around and showing you as less than you are?
In dreams.
Yeah. You know, it might show you as a bum or a hooker, or, and of course you're neither of those things, but the dream is saying, look at the weaker side now. Where if the ego's weak, it'll boost you up. It'll show you doing good things, following brave paths, things like that.
Is Gilgamesh like the self?
Gilgamesh should be the self.
And Jung the ego?
And Jung the ego. Yeah. Again, remember, it's the first way he's trying to formulate this. It's a very rudimentary formulation. And today we'll see him fine-tune all that. But he'll fine-tune it throughout the rest of the book. A quote I thought was very important, and I don't remember whether I told you the parallel quote from Symbols of Transformation, was on 281. Second column, the first large paragraph, go to the end and then go up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines. His essence is blind, excessive longing, and tempestuous force. That he is the self. His essence is the self. In other words, I was happy to see Jung agreed with what I was understanding about his text, that the self in its unconscious state is raw instinct. Now you can see how he's beginning to differentiate himself from Freud here. Freud talks about instinct, period. Jung talks about instinct as the state of the self when it's unknown. Or when I should say instinct, overpowering instinct, driven instinct, you know. These guys who ruin their career at the age of 50 or 60, or like Strauss-Kahn, for example, you know. For what? That's the self, pushing. Now, Freudian would say, oh, that's an unresolved sexual problem. We'd say, maybe, but maybe it's an unresolved identity problem that the self is using the instincts to communicate. So Gilgamesh, then, that's the blindness of Gilgamesh, that blind, excessive longing and tempestuous force. And I don't know whether you can read what I wrote up there. Maybe not. I can barely read it. It's a sentence from Volume 5, which I think restates what Jung just said. And it's a powerful sentence to keep in mind all the time with Jung. And what I find so interesting, he wrote that sentence before he wrote the Red Book. So it's like he kind of understood it mentally, and then he comes back to the Red Book. Let me read it to you, and then we'll go through it. The onslaught of instinct then becomes an experience of divinity, provided that man does not succumb to it and follow it blindly, but defends his humanity against the animal nature of the divine power. Shall I read that again? The onslaught of instinct then becomes an experience of divinity, provided that man does not succumb to it and follow it blindly, but defends his humanity against the animal nature of the divine power. That's saying what I just said, in other words. We get nailed by instinctual drives. Sex, power being, I think, sex, power, and greed for possessions being the primary ones. Gotta have it. And that is a veiled expression of the divine. by divine, we would say the self. So the self works through an onslaught of instinct. And you can get the self out of it. In other words, you can find the message in that onslaught if you don't succumb to it. You have to feel it. You have to experience it. But you have to hold your own vis-a-vis it.
So in the visions, when he says, in the animal, it's the God, it's the same idea. And what he suggested to Christiana Morgan, the woman in the visions, is that she loved both men.
Yeah.
So she feel all of it, experience it all, and also the head on it.
See, that's the key.
And that she did not
do. That's the not succumbing blindly. You may have to live it out, but you have to live it out watching your dreams while you do so.
And she didn't do what?
What did you say? She didn't do that. She turned away from her high dreams and just went headlong into the
hair
with Henry.
What was
Morgan.
His name?
No, Morgan.
Murray.
Henry Murray. And remember, she wasn't telling you in all her dreams. See what I mean? So that is following it blindly. And if you do that, you're damned, as she was. You can also be damned by pretending it's not happening. She err on the side of, yes, it's happening, but I'm not really going to reflect on it. And what I have seen with folks, and not often, this doesn't come up often, but I just worked with a woman like this, who fell in love with a neighbor. Talk about awkward. And was honest about it, told her husband, discussed it with the neighbor. It was damn uncomfortable for about 2 years, and then she began dreaming of cities underground. See, that's the unconscious self that were coming up. And when the city emerged, she decided to make a professional change, realized that the man she thought was so great wasn't so great when she found out some other things about him, and the thing dissipated. It leads you in, it gives you an image of your new life, and then it leads you out, if you do it consciously. So not following it blindly is defending your humanity against the animal nature of the divine power. So the divine power, again, is the self. The self appears in an animal way, and that's what you have to wrestle with to get the self-image out of it. That's what Jung is discovering now. And again, you can see the rapport with Freud, and in that both Freud and Jung start with instincts. For Freud, that's the end of the story. For Jung, the instinct is a vehicle, or can be a vehicle, to the self.
And this really sets the ego up to be the mediator.
So by holding on to the passion and watching the dream, you see the ego is mediating between the two sides. And then when the dreams show the new self, the ego takes that up. And as far as I've seen it, then the passionate desire dwindles. But it's consciousness through emotion.
I just had dinner this week with a friend I haven't seen for a year. She's in her early 30s. And she said, her mother and father were divorcing. And her father, who was a pastor, left her a note on the bed, and he left a note in the church office saying, I'm going off with the church secretary. And he moved out of state. Just
wow. Be interested to hear chapter 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's not but that is rather succumbing to it and following it blindly.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting a sense of what Jung is beginning to understand as he separates himself out from Freud. Another way to put it is he's beginning to see the spirit in instinct and how you work with that.
And I mean, after taking their classes and realizing that Jung really did take the stand against it,
mm-hmm.
where, I mean, I studied, I think, 20 years of what some science in the 80s about Jung and psychology, but I hadn't really got that, you know, that you're supposed to fight against it, take a stand, and you don't have to always agree.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Then you're just identified with the self.
I mean, I guess the difference between Jungian analysts, but, you know, in the dream, one person would say, you know, look at that from both sides and take a stand.
Yeah.
Whereas another one just would say, well, the dream's always right.
Oh. It's insane.
So, that's so powerful to me that you know, he would say, take a stand against it.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it does mean living it out. That's a whole other question. But if you do live it out, you've got to be prepared to take the consequences, which is not fleeing with a note, but telling the wife, telling the congregation, facing the music, you might say. And watching what the unconscious is doing with this experience while you're living it out. And if it's the self behind it, as you see the self, the desire will dwindle. If it's not the self, if it's just a genuine relationship, then insight won't change the intensity of the feeling.
In that the little saga I just mentioned, the guy's son went to the congregational meeting where they were saying what's happened. And he stood up in front of them and told them. Stood in for his father.
See, what a coward his father is makes his son carry his burden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where else in Christianity do you see cast your burden to somebody else? That's why these people are so foul in my mind. Yeah. Okay, one thing, because I forgot the computer last time, we kind of just went through these quickly. I didn't know whether you wanted to just revisit these in a bigger frame. This is the passage. Now I'm going back a little bit.
Now what image is that?
This is
41.
Yes. Page. 41 and 42. It's on page 280 in the English. You find it? Well,
yeah.
Okay. We went through this, but I thought we work good as a group, and if you wanted to just quickly review, I don't know if there's anything. These are the side drawing. I don't know if there's anything to be said here or not. But what we did talk a little bit about we'll come back to that in a second was how those forms were included in the mandala. Do we need to go through that, or are we happy with that? Okay. There's something that I don't think anyone said, which I can't believe I saw because I'm terrible with pictures, but anyone see anything there that we didn't talk about?
That man at the bottom?
The picture here is, this is the segment where Jung says, I am blinded and Gilgamesh is lamed. And then Gilgamesh is having a hard time, and Jung then watches the sunrise.
And, Carol mentioned the dragon, and I thought, looking at it, I could see that. Is it, Carol, would you
point
that again? Because I'm not sure I got the right.
It's on the cloud.
Should
or
that
cup.
How do I make it work?
I think, push that little red thing at the top.
So here's the head.
Okay,
eyeball.
I did. Okay.
The ribs back here, the legs, the body.
It's supposed to be sunrise. That see, there's Gilgamesh laying, and Gilgamesh has just become lamed, and they spent the night together, and now Jung is watching the sunrise.
We talked about the column in the center, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, I'll just say what I...
Yeah.
I thought it looked like a butterfly.
Ah. What the...
The whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, you're getting good.
Well, after 30 years, almost having failed my picture exam. As if to say the birth of the soul.
Very good.
Well, thank you.
That adds a lot.
Does it? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether it was just my mind's eye or not.
No, I thought about that last time.
Did you? Uh-huh.
Like old woman, young woman, that we're showing you.
Yeah.
Look at it.
Yeah.
Yes.
What did you say about the old man? And I couldn't hear everybody's comments on the tape. What was that about the old man?
That's Gilgamesh.
The man
laying
down.
Yeah. Okay. See, they... What has happened up to this point, they've had a confrontation, and Jung confronting Gilgamesh has become blind, Gilgamesh confronting Jung has become lamed, and he's lying there injured, and they spend a cold night, and in the morning, then he's still laying injured, and Jung gets up and sees the sunrise.
Regains his sight?
Well, he must, because he never says anything about it again. Except for that blind desire.
So Jung is the one going like this?
Yes, this is Jung here.
Would it help if we lowered the shades just a teeny bit from people having trouble seeing? We could just lower them a little. Kind of lose a little.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. I don't know if this is significant, but
it's
like
there's an
umbrella.
Up here?
Yeah.
Oh, here?
Yeah.
You mean one of the
things
on the back?
Yeah.
Well, I see the white part. The light part.
That's a handle?
The handle.
Huh. This may or may not have any reference, but I thought about it last week and I didn't say anything, but it's popped out again to me. It, when I first saw it, about the Twin Towers, just on fire. I don't even know what that would be about, but
that's interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's pertinent or not. Think about it.
I'd like to pitch the middle way because you've got two fires on each side warming the middle way. It's almost as though the sunrise is double.
It sort of reminds me of the doubling of a thing before it becomes conscious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you go with Carl's idea that this is a dragon, then the dragon and the butterfly are connected. Dragon would be the blind instinctual.
We talked about the dragonfly.
Or the serpent also.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Yes, the serpent aspect of Sophia,
mm-hmm.
the feminine.
Mm-hmm. And so that the dragon and the butterfly are juxtaposed.
Mm-hmm. And that dragon's going to come back later on in the images and just be more fully present in one of his later images.
Well, he seems to use the dragon this sort of dragon and serpent snake interchangeably. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of one particular image that will be later on of the dragon. It's so powerful.
I was listening to the tape. I wasn't there that day when you discussed the historiated initial 40.
Uh-huh. Which one is that? Do you remember?
Go backwards. That's the one where...
With the eye.
This one? Yeah, that's the one. And it just... There was some comments about the rays being a penetration. And it occurred to me that you could look at it in the opposite way also, as those rays being a radiation. Of, perhaps the gold rays are that middle way.
Mm-hmm.
And the snake radiates that golden aspect in the form of a spiral, which speaks to that idea of the feminine principle.
Mm-hmm.
And it radiates that golden aspect until they surround it as stars.
Yeah.
The pattern of his fate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to add that.
Absolutely.
To the...
Yeah.
And then if you go back to the image that we were just looking at, where Gilgamesh is just laying on the ground, and that pattern...
is a temple.
Yeah, it's now a temple.
Mm-hmm.
Working.
You know, these geometric patterns that he's surrounding things with sort of remind me of somewhere where he speaks of our most ancient language, the visual image, and how when man first began to express this, you know, he would just make these geometric marks of every kind on stone. And also Jung found that when his patients would hallucinate, a lot of times their initial hallucinations would just be these geometric shapes. Mm-hmm. Like there's some sort of primal language of the visual thinking.
In the first geometric form.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid my computer has crashed.
Daryl just published it.
Oh, okay. It's by an analyst from, I think she's from New Zealand. Right, it's her first name, Latin. First Latin.
She's from where is she?
I think she's from New Zealand.
Oh, New Zealand.
Or Australia. Anyway,
one or the other, yeah.
She grew up helping her father with the bee farm.
Uh-huh.
And her parents had from his father. So she knows a lot about the life of the bee, but then she studies myth. She brings myth and everything over to her. It's very well done work.
Yeah,
I
think it's a good one.
That picture was unbelievable. I thought, you know, right? With the egg and all that stuff.
The mandala?
Yeah.
incorporating all that other stuff before.
Yeah.
Which speaks to what Carol was saying about it, the symbolic language, the most primitive language.
That like the essential
forms to create something.
Mm-hmm, because he says everything starts with an image. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a savant who sees all numbers as a visual shape. And to do his mathematics, he doesn't calculate anything in his head. He just goes inside, looks at the shapes, and the string of shapes are numbers.
Wow.
They give him the answer. So he can do things like calculate pi to the 21st decimal point and things like that just by going inside and waiting for the shapes to come and saying the numbers that he sees that are equivalent to those shapes.
Fascinating.
That's the picture you're referring to, don't you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You see, that is image 45.
Well, that's what they're saying. All right, everything in there is from previous images.
That line of shapes on the left.
The shapes.
It's as though they're represented.
As though, but are they literal?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're literally. I have to look more closely.
I
was trying to find some of these over here.
But it seems to be the same language of shape.
Definitely.
And do you remember the image we had of that black worm-like creature?
Death?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now look at the gold coming right off his head. I don't know, it's got a face. Mm-hmm. It just reminds me of that's now transformed.
Here you mean?
Yes, go up.
Go
you
up.
Right
yeah. I think we're
sort of
right now.
Face.
Oh,
face.
That one,
there's
I see it.
Yeah.
Right there.
Mm-hmm. And then there's one below that.
Mm-hmm. But that's, I think, the magic of the geometric images that speak the ancient visual language. You know, we can read everything into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, feeling and symbolism of all kinds. But you know, going back to that one that I was just looking at, with the spiral, and they have the dragonfly nymphs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, why nymphs? You know. But the nymph, the dragonfly in its nymph stage is an underwater creature. And to me this speaks of, you know, some sort of unconscious aspect. If the dragonfly represents the reality of the psyche, of the mind, mm-hmm. the thing that we can't see or touch, then perhaps it's in the nymph stage because that concept is aspects of it are still unconscious. What that really means, that the psyche is real, and yet, you know, he calls it, he begins to call Isdvar a fantasy.
Yep.
And so he's dealing with that right now. What does it mean? Yes, mm-hmm. What does it mean that a fantasy is also a reality?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why, at that stage, the dragonflies are nymphs.
Makes sense to me. Okay. Anything else?
What you were saying about the geometric forms was borne out by, I think, written language. Jung himself uses very geometric letters here, and it's clearly if you go back and look at say Aztec calligraphy. Hieroglyphics or whatever, it's very similar to what you get here in this manual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Hebrew letters and numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it may be true if you go back and look at the calligraphy that's used you know, the letters were first demarcated, those forms were being used heavily. I mean, the Chinese pictograms were definitely used too. So, that's something to be safe to say.
You have to go really far back with the Chinese because they got through so many progressions.
Right.
That would be interesting.
But I'm sure you can probably trace it back.
Project.
It's a very sophisticated cursive writing of Victorian era or something like that. Or, it's moving a long ways away from that. Our attempt to get more sophisticated.
So it's like his images are coming from a really ancient
place, coming from the very basis of visual thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Well, did you want to say some more about the Soul Niger, the Black Sun? Because we were sharing a little discussion online. And
oh, you mean this?
Well, he does. He talks about the Soul Niger. It's not an eclipse sun.
No.
It is a sun with dual aspects. It has a light and a dark aspect.
I think it just has a dark aspect, doesn't it?
Well, what I'm saying is, yes, that is, Sol Niger is the dark aspect.
Yeah.
But it can have that because this mercurial sun, the sun of alchemy, has a light aspect and a dark aspect.
Absolutely.
And the dark aspect is the Sol Niger, which is also the night sea journey or the Negredo.
Yep.
But Kathy and I were wondering if, well, is it an eclipse? But no, it's not.
No, it's not an eclipse.
It's not an eclipse.
Well, and, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
Nope.
And I was just saying that that dark star has come up now in my work as representing the inferior function. But I guess that is not quite the same as the Negredo. I mean, although they're related, but it's not exactly the same.
Well, the way I've understood it, it's the light by which you understand yourself when you're depressed.
Well, I guess, you know, they're... I suppose my dark star isn't as full an image as the Soul Niger.
Oh, what's your dark star?
Just the inferior function.
Oh.
But, you know, perhaps I'm looking at it too.
Give yourself time. Well, I think the inferior function does come up in a depression.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just not looking at it with a big enough vision.
So we could say out of any dark experience, be the meaning in the dark experience.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's my understanding. That's, again, that's just my interpretation. I don't think he says that anywhere. But
well, this picture sure shows it, because out of that comes the snake with the head of an egg, a golden egg.
Which we'll see coming up.
Right.
Yeah.
And that shows the new birth out of if one is willing to incubate that.
Yeah, endure it.
Right. Because you see all that almost lava-like heat and the redness in the background of that
mountain.
But it's contained. And then there's the serpentine up to the dark star.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it's the head
is
the serpent with the egg. That's my understanding of it. That
there's trail. I think that's what you're saying too, isn't it, Jane? That it's coming out
sort of that. But I just wondered if is that it's coming out of the stars.
That's how I see it too.
Into the of course, down.
Like the
it's downward.
The divine feminine is being incorporated into a symbol of wholeness. That's how I see it. Because the serpent is also one of the symbols of Sophia.
Did Jung do these beautiful watercolors simultaneous with his writing in the Black Book, or did these illuminations he had later?
When
he did the Red Book.
Right. As far as I know. And they're tempered. They're not watercolors,
tempera.
Are they? They're tempera.
Which is a water-based.
Oh, is it? Okay.
So they weren't maybe representing the spontaneous experiences of the text, maybe so much as illuminating it or illustrating.
Hard to say. What? I suspect a mixture of both.
I suppose it could even be experiences he had that he took note of and then took the time to reproduce. Who knows? They talk about that in the beginning of it, about how they were.
Yeah.
Another thing I thought was curious was the windows in the temple area at the very bottom. Mm-hmm. Each has a different light in it.
Hmm.
Like to the very, our very left, it's very faint. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, just the difference. They're not all centered.
Mm-hmm.
Some are fatter. I don't know what that means, but I'm not kind of curious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was thinking about those two. I think does that represent the four functions?
Yeah.
Because the brighter lights would be the more, you know,
Interior or conscious one, mm-hmm. right? And the left one, closer to the unconscious.
Yeah, it's almost dim, huh? That would fit.
Yeah, it
does. Anything else?
We usually incorporate two unconscious.
In theory, they say three, but I think I'm still on one.
I mean, normally two, and then the third one's harder to. And
yeah.
Really almost impossible.
Impossible. Yeah.
Now this isn't the first time we see that menorah shape, is it?
What do you mean by the menorah?
yeah.
Oh.
Because it becomes a bit of a theme in the subsequent images, and I think it's kind of a nod to the beginnings of Christianity, Jehovah.
Yeah.
You know, this is how it all. This is
where it started.
Mm-hmm.
There were menorahs before, but I don't know.
Where did they begin? I don't remember.
I can't remember. I just know they.
No, they were in the last couple. The shape is definitely in some of those. And then that.
Is that where they started?
Mm-hmm. I think we've seen that.
I can't remember how we first saw it.
I go back, but I'm afraid of crashing my computer again. I don't think it likes to go back fast.
It might be close to the beginning.
I thought another interesting thing was the geometric designs on his clothes.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And his, and what that represented to him.
With his arms up, like a lot of the symbols.
Yeah, that sort of reminds me of priestly garments that you see in antiquity.
What you alluded to is the head. It seems like there's a transformation of those. And they're all coming out of his head.
Oh, that was Kathy that saw them.
That
it transforms as it goes up. Definitely a progression of visual thinking that arrives at the egg.
It makes me think it's interesting that scientists are finding more black holes. I don't know if an indication where it's coming more into consciousness of the shadows or what.
I think of the black hole like the black sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was
Well, in my mind, the insight that comes through darkness. I don't think I've ever seen him say that, but that's. Not that I remember, but who knows?
Aurora.
Maybe more Aurora. Well, we're ready to begin. Let's take a break.
Well, the images are really...
Yeah.
I think getting attention.
Yeah.
Especially now.
Yeah.
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 Because you can feel them so strong.
You can. Isn't it amazing?
Yes. Don't crash. Just move out.